And it looks like Judgment Day is finally coming for the former Steinhoff CEO Markus Jurster. According to a statement from a court in Germany, the proceedings against the accused in the criminal prosecution centers on Steinhoff, and they say it's believed to be, well, we think it's Markus Jurster. It's set to kick off next year. While the statement doesn't name Jurster, it does refer to a former CEO of Steinhoff International Holdings, age 61. It also says he was a CEO in South Africa until the end of 2017. Rob Rose from the Financial Mail joins us now. Hi, Rob. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Evening, Ray.
All right. So what do you know? What have you learned over the past 24 hours? Because we have sort of vague details on this.
Yeah, well, I think it was inevitable to some extent that the German prosecutors were going to charge Markus Jurster. They mentioned that they were investigating a couple of individuals a while ago. And in fact, the first part of this investigation was unearthed in 2015 when they raided Steinhoff just before it listed in Frankfurt, actually. So that's when the German prosecutors and police thought that they had some kind of a notion that there might be accounting fraud here. So in a sense, this has been a long time in coming. It's 7 years. And now we have the first indication that next year they're going to be prosecuting the individual that is, you know, if you read between the lines, is very clearly Markus Jurster. Whether he'll be there in person, I mean, I suppose that's the big issue. I think it's more likely that he'll be tried in absentia in Germany. And then what'll happen if he's found guilty? I think those are interesting questions.
Yeah. Rob, where is Markus Jurster? Do we know?
I mean, it depends. I mean, I think last I heard he was sort of in the Western Cape. He was between Hermanus, Stellenbosch, and various places around there. He still has that house that was essentially where the contents were attached by the SA Reserve Bank last month. So that's where he spends most of his time, it's believed. So yeah, he's certainly around, and I wonder what he thinks of this particular move by the German courts.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, our national prosecuting authority, we went through state capture. We saw what happened to the MPA, but we now have an investigative directorate. And they seem to be quite bent on finding these prosecutions, making sure that we've seen it with Transnet, making sure that people are prosecuted for crimes. Now, of course, you've had it in your book, Stein Heist. This is the biggest one, financial crime, that's hit us, I think, in my living memory. Do you think finally at some point Markus Jurster, a patrol van's going to go around and scoop him up?
Ray, I mean, I definitely think at some stage he's going to face action in South Africa. I think that's inevitable. The difference with the German case is that this dates back to 2011 and 2012, whereas the cases he's likely to face in South Africa are far more recent than that, up to 2017. So the Germans investigated a specific set of circumstances, 2011, 2012. I mean, it was massive amounts of money. It was sort of 15 billion rand at a time, these transactions that they say were fake. But our NPA, you know, it has been denuded of special forensic skills, and this is quite complicated for them to prove. But they're also trying to prove a far more recent set of frauds than the Germans. So I think it was inevitable that the Germans were going to get going earlier. But I think when we finally get action in this country, it'll be of a wider scope and certainly more serious than the German allegations.
Yeah. Rob, perhaps you can just take us through, I think it was around about December 2017, if memory serves me correctly. I remember Bruce Whitfield running through to the newsroom to say, are you seeing this? Are you seeing this? Take us through what happened in those 24 hours when everything sort of came undone and Markus Jurster sold off and he ran. Just take us through what happened.
Well, I mean, unbeknown to the rest of the public, you know, in the week before that big announcement made on December the 5th, 2017, there were ructions at Steinhoff's headquarters. Deloitte, the auditors, had refused to sign off the financial accounts. And there was a big effort by Christo Wiese, the chairman, and Markus Jurster, who was then the CEO, to get them to sign off the accounts. But Deloitte was insisting that there seemed to be too many holes and too many unanswered questions. So they're not going to sign off the results. So Markus said, well, don't worry. I'm going to head off to Germany and, you know, get the documents you need and I'll be back on Monday. Monday, I think it's December the 4th or so, he arrives back and he says to Christo Wiese, you know, hang on, I'll be there. I'm just having a shower and I'll be in the office soon with all the documents you need. And he just never arrived. And later that day, he sent a message by a lawyer to Steinhoff's board and said, you know, I'm happy to resign. I'll resign now. I've made mistakes. You know, would you accept my resignation? And, you know, he just never arrived that day. He never came and met Christo Visser. He didn't speak to them again. And I think from there, they realized that they had no option but to put out a statement to the public saying essentially that there are suspected accounting irregularities at Steinhoff and Markus Huster has resigned with immediate effect. So to the market, that was, you know, that reeked of devastation. Yeah. The share price plunged, I think, 86% down in 2 days. And considering the majority of pension funds in the country had shares in Steinhoff, it was, you know, it was like a bomb had gone off on the JSE. It dragged down a whole lot of other shares too, like PSG and others that were linked to it. And it was quite a devastating moment in the markets. And I think, you know, we've since seen a lot of other frauds happen with other companies like Tongaat, but this was the first and the most devastating of them.
Yeah. Something, Rob, I battled to get my head around is the fact that the House of Cards, as you could call it, came down on that day. But how is it that nobody else, you spoke about a week before, but nobody else knew about this? Or did perhaps Christo Visser and others suspect it? They've said they didn't know. Christo Visser said he was caught unawares. But it just seems to be crazy that such a huge company like Steinhoff, this would just come down so quickly.
It is staggering. It really is staggering. And that's part of the surprising part of this is just how quickly it fell apart. But, you know, Ray, I mean, there were signs, there were red flags for people for more than a decade before this. And there were people who did raise the red flag and say, this is wrong or this seems weird. And certainly in 2015, you know, 2 years before Steinhoff's big moment where it collapsed, the German prosecutors raided Steinhoff just before the listing. And I think if you're an investor and the German police rock up and say, you know, we suspect that there's fraud in this company, you take a deeper dive. Now, Christo Visser's answer to that is that, well, we did take a deeper dive. We hired a law firm, various law firms, at ridiculous amounts of money to investigate these claims. And the law firms came back and said, you know, there's no problem at all. So it does reek of an entire system that failed. I mean, it could be that, you know, the problem was that Markus Huster was the one who briefed the law firms. So they came back saying nothing's wrong. But, you know, as Christo Visser keeps pointing out, the banks failed to detect it. The auditors, internal auditors, there's a whole range of people. There's a whole system that failed in this case.
Now, the association with Techie Town, there was also that as well. But there have been some recent deals, some recent money that was sort of pumped Markus Huster's way. What have you learnt about that?
Well, in that case, it seems that what Bram van Haestien, who was the guy who founded Techie Town, did is that he basically took a mortgage loan over the property where Markus Huster lives in Hermanus. And it was quite substantial. And, the money, quite what happened to the money is uncertain. It would have potentially gone to settle debts that Markus Huster might have had. But there's no real clarity on that. What Bram van Haestien has said so far is that there was an opportunity to invest in the house that Markus Huster lives. And he saw this opportunity and thought, well, it's a good residential asset. I mean, I'm not sure if that, you know, it sounds incredibly coincidental. So I'm not sure how true that rings, but, certainly one thing it would do is that it would give Bram van Haestien a mortgage over the property where Markus lives and hence theoretically make it untouchable to some extent. From the various legal actions that are coming Markus's way from angry shareholders or potential authorities.
Yeah, but I would have thought there would have been bad blood because after what happened with Techie Town, you go and invest you get all those shares, that those shares become worthless, you lose all that money, but yet we see this now.
Yeah, it is interesting because certainly what happened in the case of Techie Town is Steinhoff bought Techie Town shortly before it collapsed. And the guys who owned Techie Town, including Bram van Haestien, they weren't paid in cash. They were given Steinhoff shares in return for this. So when Steinhoff's share price collapsed, the money that they were ostensibly paid by Steinhoff collapsed too. So you could say that they lost, you know, badly when Steinhoff collapsed. And so you would think that Bram van Haestien and the Techie Town owners would be quite angry about this. And they might hold particular animosity towards Markus. But their answer so far to that is that, well, you know, we don't really know what he's done yet. Nothing's been proven in court and you have to forgive people and you have to behave in a very magnanimous way towards people. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, certainly I can say for sure is that a lot of people I've spoken to who have lost money because of what Markus Huster has alleged to have done are far less charitable. So yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure many people would act like that.
Yeah. If I had to lose $100, I get a little bit mean about things. Rob, what have you learned about the German authorities, perhaps speaking to their SA counterparts? Has there been any dialogue between the two that you've heard?
I don't actually know. I mean, the German prosecutors, when I've spoken to them, I got the impression that they were working on a specific element of their investigation, which was related to these 2011 and 2012 transactions. And some of them were quite blatant from the charge sheet. Essentially, it's fictitious companies, fake companies with nothing in it, changing hands, being sold between people who are linked to Markus Jürster, and essentially pumping billions into Steinhoff's income statement or financials that just weren't valid. Whereas the South African police and the hawks that are looking into this are examining things like the insider trading claims of 2017, the wider fraud that happened from, say, 2011 until 2017, which is encompassed in this gigantic PwC forensic report. And this PwC forensic report, you know, took months to do, and that's now in the possession of the hawks. So their investigation is far more complicated and far more recent. So I think that that's partly, you know, the delay, but it does seem that they had, you know, to some extent they look at different aspects of the fraud. But I'm not sure to what extent they have, collaborated in terms of this investigation or not.
Yeah, we'll certainly have to get some more details. Editor at the Financial Mail, Rob Rose, thank you so much for coming onto The Money Show tonight. Really do appreciate you taking the time to chat to us. Thank you. So many questions that go with this. Read Rob's book, Stein Heist. It really is worth the read because it's the biggest financial crime that I can remember in this country, and yet nothing has happened. And recently, I was on a panel with mediating with the ID, the Independent Directorate's head, Andrea Johnson, and she did hint that, Steinhoff is something that is being investigated, that they have to do something, they are going to do something. But yet, we are sort of waiting. We've seen what's happened with Transnet. We saw those executives come to the fore. I think five of them, they being charged. So if you can get Transnet and also those who were involved with, say, captured Eskom, what about this crime? Because, I mean, 200 billion rand in market value disappearing in 24 hours. That's a story right there.